And we're back, ladies and gents, with episode 2 of our online happiness economy podcast. You're here with me, Jason Nicholas. Well, I almost called myself Jason. Did you see that?
I am as excited as Nicholas is. We're not even going to keep you waiting because we can't believe that this has happened. So I think we've got to get it going as quickly as possible.
Yes, let's just set it up. So we do, this is the obviously the online, the podcast version of the podcast. And then what happens is we take the information that we get from the podcast, we use it to go and create a live performance, which Jay and I do on stage together, which we did in Cape Town last year. Somebody at the end of the show, a lady by the name of Ranelle gave us, after she'd seen the show, she gave us this book, which believed that it's something that would benefit us. The book is called Rethinking Happiness and the Beliefs That Guide Us. It's been signed. We find out whose signature this is on the book. But who we have is this guy, Peter Tuchel. We're going to ask him how to pronounce it.
Ladies and gentlemen of the world of happiness, please welcome Peter Tuchel.
Hey, Peter, thank you so much for joining us.
It's great to be with you. Thanks so much for having me. Greetings to South Africa.
Peter, how do we say your surname?
It's Tuchel. I know it's a bit confusing for English speakers. It's a Swiss family name. And yeah, it's spelled Tuchel as if it was spelled T-O-Y.
Okay,
no,
that makes perfect sense. Peter, so I don't know if you know the story about how we got into contact with you. Jason and I do this podcast called The Happiness Economy. And we then do a live version where we go and tell people what we've learned from the guests. And essentially what we do is try and get most information about happiness out of our guests and then go and share it on a stage.
And in a live we essentially have just been, you know, so curious about happiness. Why is everybody in the pursuit of happiness? Why are we so obsessed with happiness? So what is happiness? And why, when we ask a room full of people what happiness means to them, only two of them can answer. So we're stand-up comedians, and we sell happy, you know, in inverted commas. And what we did is we started inviting people who we perceive to be happy based on the little window of their lives that they show us on social media. And we've been interrogating that happiness. Nicholas has read your book, and when he got halfway, he started nagging me, dude, you got to get on. I've only started reading it, and already my mind is blown. And we can't wait to share our thoughts with you and at the same time consume yours. So welcome to it. Nick, let's get in.
Yeah. I think my first question is, firstly, I want to say thank you for putting everything into the book and making it available. It's the type of information that I feel like when you get it and realize the information you have, have to share it with the world. It's not the type of thing you keep to yourself. And I just want to ask, what got you there? What got you thinking so deeply about happiness, and more so, so the beliefs? Because what blew my mind was how you managed to change the way I think. And where did it all come from?
Yeah, I mean, I've been on my own personal development journey for a long time. As I hit my 30s, I really hit a very low emotional point in my life. I struggled with depression even before I even knew what depression was, but from early childhood. So when I got to my 30s, I was really at this point of despair. You know, around my life was great. I had built a company with my brother. We were in Canada, and from the outside, my life looked great. But you know, I'd go home to my apartment and be really unhappy, and then felt really guilty about it because, you know, I had no reason to be unhappy. And that really got me onto this journey of looking within, getting some therapy, but also getting a lot of mentoring, reading a ton of books. And so that was a journey that started for me more than 25 years ago. And the thing that I realized more than anything else that I have done in with my life, you know, what really made the improvement was changing the way I believe and changing the habitual thoughts that I have. And so that's kind of, the book is an aggregate of the sort of experience and knowledge that I've put together over the years. But it's also, you know, I shifted from working in the corporate world to being a coach. And because I think this is a really important thing that a lot more people need is that awareness of you can change your life so drastically by changing what you think and believe.
The idea of your thought, like, I'm in a space now after reading the book. I finished the book probably about a month ago. And I find myself now, whenever my brain goes into that negative cycle that you speak about in the book, I stop myself and go, no, we're not allowing these thoughts into our head today. We want positive thinking. And it's amazing things have happened in the book. Guys, I can't even, I'm just so excited. Peter, thank you so much.
Thanks for it. Look, that's reward in itself, like knowing that, you know, the book has touched people enough to have that kind of an impact. You know, I'm super grateful for your feedback. That's excellent.
Nicholas and I speak often about the fact that it's not rocket science. And you know, even though I've only just started the book, these are simple things that I struggle to understand why it's not logic and common sense, and why we're not kind of indoctrinated with this type of thinking from the time we can think. Am I on the right track? Because it doesn't seem like rocket science. You don't need to be a genius to figure this stuff out.
No, but the thing is, so many things that we're taught in school are not the relevant things we need to thrive in life, you know, in so many ways. And happiness is one of them. If anything, you know, we, you know, people, you know, human beings thrived and evolved in order to through cooperation and helping each other. And that meant to cooperate, you also have to get along with each other. And so we learn from a young age how to fit in and how to assimilate. And so we adopt a lot of our beliefs and you know, our culture and all those things. They can be very good, very positive. But also we inherit a lot of limiting beliefs, a lot of fear-based beliefs that stand in our way. And then we're never taught to question that. We just internalize it. So, you know, a lot of times when I bring up philosophy, people maybe roll their eyes or, you know, go, okay, well, that's maybe for university professors, but it's not, because I'm certainly not an academic. But the thing is, from the time we were old enough to think, we started putting together beliefs about ourselves, about the world and our place in it. And through that process, we never stop to ask ourselves, does this belief support me? Does, you know, the part of the process can be, you know, is this belief true? That's a really important thing when we're questioning ourselves and our abilities. But it's also really important to ask the question, is this belief useful to me? Because a lot of our beliefs, we cannot prove if they're right or wrong. You know, they're maybe a theory, they're a hypothesis, and we believe them for whatever reason, because we've had an experience, because someone else has told us who's an authority figure, but we'd never stop to say, you know, does this support me? Does this belief really align with my values and where I want to go in life? And so when we learn that actually we can change the way we think, and we don't have to, our beliefs don't have to be our identity. We can change them. We can evolve them. And as we learn and grow and have new experiences, we can start to shift those beliefs, because a lot of the things our well-meaning parents or caregivers passed on to us, you know, were meant to be, you know, good values but maybe they don't serve us anymore. And so that's why I think it's so important to rethink all of those things and make sure it's supporting our happiness. And I love that you guys are talking about happiness, because for me, it's such an important thing that, you know, people think is a bit frivolous, but at the end of the day, happy people are better partners, better neighbors, better citizens. You know, you find people making much better decisions when they're coming from a place of joy and love and happiness.
As opposed to a place of fear, make decisions out of love, not out of fear.
Yes.
We're about, you know, 30 odd episodes in, and the way we think about happiness has changed significantly, you know, after just having so many conversations. And one of the biggest has been that happiness doesn't really exist the way we're taught it exists. So in the limited time that somebody has taught us about happiness, I think that I, for one, had a very skewed example that it's not about, like, happiness only exists in the now. It exists where my feet are right now. And happiness doesn't mean kumbaya, rainbows, unicorns, and laughter all the time. And happiness also doesn't mean that every day is a good day and you never get sad and you never get hurt and you never feel pain. And it like you say, as soon as you bring the subject up, people start rolling their eyes because they think that it's just this, airy fairy kind of talk where, we've found that there is so much substance in first understanding as an individual. What does happiness mean to you without comparing yourself to the expectations of others or what you think others need to perceive and how much of an individual journey that is and how difficult the world makes it to even start thinking like an individual or being like an individual. So for us, I think that it's been an amazing journey because it's had two prongs. So we do the podcast, but we also do a comedy show where we kind of do people into buying tickets because we're pretty popular comedians in South Africa and we do people into buying tickets for a comedy show. And all of a sudden it gets, deep and heavy. And our favorite comment has been, it's the type of show where you laugh until you cry and cry until you cry, because that's what we believe, happiness is. As part of this process, we've come up with what we believe are, for us, some fundamental principles that if you could stay close to every day and engineer into your life every day, you would be able to engineer the happiest possible life that you could live. And those principles for us, we'd love to bounce off you, are gratitude, acceptance, and perspective. So we call it GAP. And Nick has a nice articulation where, if you wake up and you're feeling like something's missing and there's a bit of a gap, you need to fill that gap with gratitude, acceptance, and perspective. Are we on the right track, do you think?
Absolutely. I think those are really great guidelines because gratitude is one of those things that I learned a long time ago. When I find ways to be more grateful, you automatically feel better. You automatically feel, an elevated sense of joy and appreciation, and all those things that that feedback happiness. Acceptance, I think, is a really great one because one of the who I consider a teacher indirectly because I've read a lot of his books and heard his talks is Eckhart Tolle. He talks about we live life as if the present moment were an obstacle we had to overcome. And it's all our resistance to what is that's making us so unhappy. So acceptance is not, doesn't mean we just have to deal with the, let life do what it will with us or other people. But accepting what is in the now and then looking how where we want to get to, in terms of rather than fighting against, finding ways to navigate life. And I think acceptance is that first step. Okay, this is the way it is. Now, how do I want it to be? And what's the route to get there? So I think and the P was GAP was
perspective.
Perspective. And this is so important because I work systemically, which means we take a holistic look at things. And such a key point out of the systemic principles that I work with is that changing perspective, looking at things from different angles, and that will give you a much better picture of a situation. I also think life, happiness for me is this feedback loop. It's telling us two things. It's either telling us that the way we're looking at the world is there's something skewed, or the actions and choices we're making are leading us farther from the needs and values that we have. So, but from the perspective side of things, when you're feeling depressed, it's really hard to see the world in a joyful way. But also when you're frustrated and when you're angry about things, if you can take a step back and look at it from a different angle, all of a sudden the world looks very different. So I love that acronym that you have, and I'm definitely going to adopt it, integrate it. I love it.
That's the nicest thing you've ever said to me.
Speaking about the acceptance, Jason's actually got a nice analogy on the GPS, and I think
so when we're on stage and I'm trying to land it and articulate it, I go, acceptance is not surrendering, it's not giving up, but what it is exactly like a GPS. A GPS is marvelous because whether you use Waze or Google Maps, it can take you anywhere. So a lot of us understand the destination. We obsess about the destination, but a GPS can only help you if you tell it where you are now. And sometimes admitting and accepting that where you are now is your fault, is because of the decisions that you've made. There may have been external factors, but once you accept where you are, only then can you plot a route to where you want to go. My favorite part about the analogy is the way a GPS works is it'll plot your route. It'll then give you options. You know, do you want to go on the highway? Do you want to take back routes? This road has police. This road has toll roads or toll gates. And you can choose the one that you'd like to go on. And once you press go, it no longer obsesses about the destination. It only obsesses about your next step. So instead of showing you the destination all the time, it just says in 200 meters, turn right. And I think so many of us get caught up in this trap of obsessing about where we are not, and obsessing about why we are not, you know, at the goal, at the destination, at the end point, and get stuck and don't move because we haven't accepted where we are for whatever reason. And therefore, even plotting a route becomes impossible, never mind taking that very important first step, which Nick and I speak often about, the fact that the first step is the hardest. Like, the journey gets easier after that first step. Just moving is the most difficult part. If you can take step one, you've done the most difficult part, and then just keep going.
Yeah, one of the fear responses that we have is the freeze. You know, we get stuck, and so we're afraid to make a wrong choice, and so we have no forward momentum. So absolutely, getting started, taking that first step, breaking through your fear is really important. But also, I'm a stickler for words, and you talked about fault. I think blame is not a healthy thing. So taking responsibility for where you are right now is important. Blaming yourself, I think, doesn't really help you and doesn't build you up. But I think it's the way, what you just said is so empowering, because the choices I've made have got me here. And that means the choices I make from here going forward will get me somewhere new. And so it just helps you to recognize that I have the power, because a lot of people live in this sort of a victim mentality, you know, and by nature, when you're a victim, you are powerless. And so if you can recognize that maybe you were a victim in the past, but that doesn't become part of your identity, that's empowering and helps you recognize that I can make new choices. I can take actions no matter what's happened to me in the past. I'll use that to grow and learn and become more than I am today in my future. And so having very empowering sort of language and ways of looking at the world is just, I love that.
I just have a simple question. Have you always been such an avid reader? Because reading your book, I see all the references that you make in books you've read. And is it a thing that's come from school? And have you always been this avid reader? Because, like, for myself, I hated reading at school. I read the bare minimum as much as I
still do.
And now I got to a stage like 10 years out of school where I realized that I need to read a bit more. I decided to read a book a month, and I managed to, in that year, do 10 books, which is great. But then it fell off again, and now recently I've just turned 40 now, and which has also been a big experience for me, and that kind of changed my mindset. And that's how I got back into the reading. And what I love is that your book is the first book that I read for the year, and it's put me in a space where it's changed the way I think so much that I'm ready. Like, at the moment, I'm reading The Leader with No Title, and I find it easier to read because of what I've read from your book. So the question, have you always been an avid reader?
I haven't. I mean, as a kid, I liked to read. I had a big fantasy. A lot of imagination. But I at some point I just lost interest in it. And then I think also I didn't love school. And so the things you're forced to do was something that always built up a lot of resistance in me. I think what happened to me when I was really struggling to find some new meaning and direction in my life, I started discovering books that had all this information I was looking for. And so, for me, it was always a challenge to stay focused. I would, you know, read a few pages and I would get distracted and then I'd have to cut. So it would take me a long time. But I found, like anything, with practice, it improved and I got more proficient. And I was, especially because I was really interested in the material. The more I read, the more I wanted to know. And I think that's the thing. when I, you know, historically in school, you know, you read things that you don't really want to read or you're not really inspired to read. But I started discovering so much material that just, I found very intriguing, and I got immersed in it. And I think that when, you know, that helps you get the motivation to push through whatever resistance you have to reading or to doing something that you don't really want to do. I think additionally, you know, because, over the years traveling a lot and being very busy, trying to find the time to read got more difficult. So I've started listening to a lot more audiobooks, but I still think there's no replacement for having the tangible pages in your hands. I don't have a Kindle or anything. I really like the pages, but however you read is fine. But I love the old fashioned way of turning a page.
Yeah. So Jason's a big audiobook fan. I love the idea, and he's tried to convince me, but for me, the thing is, I love is sometimes a paragraph that I want to go back and reread to properly absorb the message. And I don't like the idea of on the audiobook having to rewind and possibly miss the spots and, you know, whatever. But I love what you're saying about find the thing that interests you, find the thing that's easy to consume, and then you can just consume. I'm a reader now. I like to talk
about it. And like anything in life, the more you do it, the better you get at it. And then all of a sudden, it just becomes easier to consume the pages that you know. And you get to an understanding of what really interests you, what writing styles and so on. And I think the more you do it, the more you'll want to do it, and the better you'll get at it. So that's great. I'm glad that my book got you into reading again. So fantastic.
Your book has changed my life. I'm going to leave it at that. Your book has changed my life. I'm on it.
He's become annoyingly positive. Annoyingly. There's no other way to articulate it, but the guy is shining. And I think it's this mentality that nothing is overwhelming. Everything can be dealt with. Everything can be handled. And that's the energy that I feel from Nick at the moment. Nick, I want you to share the reference point, and I'm sure Peter knows the reference pretty well, but just for those listening in terms of perspectives, this perspective, the simplest reference point is the 5% rule.
Oh, yeah. So the 5% rule, I don't know whose rule it is, but Peter, you obviously have it. Life is 5% what happens to you, 95% the way you react.
Yeah.
And that's essentially the...
Yeah, and you know it's not about the challenges we face, and you can apply that to so many different things. I've heard there's a Dr. Gabor Maté, who's from a Canadian who's worked with people on trauma. You know, he says trauma is not what happens to you; it's how you respond to what happens to you. You know, it's what happens inside you as a result of what happened to you. So when you start to get greater control of the inner processes and how that affects the way you respond to the outer world, that makes such a difference in the choices you make and the type of life that you live. So, you know, everybody has challenges in life. And there are people who you see who've come up against incredible struggle. And yet I'm looking at Mr. Nelson Mandela behind you there, and yet they make something great out of it. And then other people just hit these small little bumps in the road and they fall apart. Right. So I think that it comes back to making the choices that are in alignment with your values, your needs, and where you want to go. And there's so many different pieces to that. Having a clear vision of where you want to get to, but also recognizing your own strength and power to do so. And the thing is, so many people think that they react to the outside world rather than being proactive and saying, this is the kind of person I want to be. This is the one kind of life I want to live. These are the places I want to get to in my life. And allowing life to be something that they create for themselves rather than kind of being pushed around by the circumstances that they're facing day to day. And I think that comes back to perspective, right? What you said before, you know, you just get that change of perspective and recognize that, yeah, I'm the captain of my life. You know, I can give control to everything else, or I can take control and make my own choices.
Yeah. I can be the director or the actor that just gets told what to do.
You decide. The so you know I'm and we've been very big on not making it fluff, because I think that the subject matter can very easily become kind of surface level, and the way I articulate that is, you know, we don't want the live show, for example, that we do to be energy drink motivation, where you know you in the room and you feel the, you know, you feel uplifted, but you don't have any tools. So 2 or 3 days later, you hit a slump, and there's no tools to apply the whatever you think you've learned to actually start affecting change in your life. So if we were to look at gratitude acceptance perspective. Gratitude, for example, do you have any tools that you can share with us? I read an article that said gratitude and anxiety are developed in the same part of the brain, which means your brain can only experience one of those sensations at a time. And it made a lot of sense to me, because when I'm overwhelmed with anxiety, no matter how hard I try and think about things that I'm obviously grateful for, I don't feel that lightness that gratitude normally brings. So I subscribe to that thought process, but are there tools that you can share that you've used to kind of make sure that you're close to your gratitude?
There are, and it's one of many things that I do. You know, the process to changing your life and improving your life is integrating the right habits. And so for me, gratitude and appreciation has become a habit that I've integrated into my daily life. So some people will like to have a gratitude ritual for in the morning. Some will do it in the evening. It's something that I end my day with. So, you know, I will specifically before I go to sleep, I'll think about things that I'm grateful for on that day. And it's not just I'm grateful to be alive. I'm grateful that for everything that I have. I try to get really specific about something that's happened that day that I'm super grateful for. And that then puts me in a state, the way you go to sleep often primes you for the next day starting the right way. And so I think for me, you know, I've been doing it for so long, it's kind of an automatic process. But for people who are just kind of getting into it, you can, you know, people talk about gratitude journal. So you can have something that you, and I think the written word is really, really important. So I don't think that typing it into your digital device is a good replacement. You know, take some paper, write it down. That whole experience does something for you, and then read it back to yourself. I think that is a great process if you're just starting out. And you can integrate it into every day. You can look for things to appreciate. So when you find yourself complaining, you can with intention look for something. What's something positive about it? Yeah, everything looks like it's falling apart, but what's something good that could come out of this? And you start to train your brain to, you know, we're wired to look for the dangers, to look for the things that are going wrong. That's why we're so attracted to the news. And, you know, that's why good news doesn't really sell, because it's just not the way we're wired. So it's really important to train ourselves to start thinking differently. And all of that comes with practice. So when you find yourself, seeing 10 things that are wrong with your life, try and with intention to look at when you feel all this kind of welling up inside you, trying to look for one thing, you know, maybe it's just, and I love giving this example of Viktor Frankl. I don't know if you've read his book, Man's Search for Meaning, but you know, he was a psychologist that was put in a concentration camp during the Second World War by the Nazis. And he describes this moment in his book where it's a cold winter day, and there's this beam of sunlight that hits his face, and he just, there's this moment of joy in otherwise, you know, atrocious conditions. So if I always tell myself, if he could find joy in a moment, I can certainly do it at any given day of my life, right?
No, I feel like that's so important. You know, there's a comedian friend of ours, Stuart Taylor, who does a bit about if you're sad and depressed, find uglier friends. You know, it's this crazy perspective. Like, if you're depressed, just hang out with people that are fatter than you. I promise you, you are gonna feel so much better. And even though he says it in jest, just that reference that you made, I think, is such a beautiful tool. Is Sometimes you need to give yourself perspective, and even on those days where you've had you believe from your perception there's nothing to be grateful for, sometimes you've got to go to the little ray of sunshine shining into the window of a concentration camp and go, that doesn't make my situation look that bad.
Yeah. And I think the other thing that undermines us is expectation and comparison. You know, we talk a lot today. I hear about, you know, economists talking about we live in the best times ever. And what makes people unhappy is this, you know, people aren't, there's less poverty, but there's relative poverty, you know, because poor people still have a refrigerator and they still have maybe have a microwave, but, you know, they're still struggling day to day. And so at the same token, you know, we have it pretty good. If you're a middle class person who, you know, your basic needs are met, you have it pretty good compared to some other people in the world. But you're comparing yourself to, you know, and this is, you know, in part, you know, the social media causes us to compare ourselves to these images that people are posting. They're posting these absolute best moments that are, in some ways, probably contrived or just set up to look better than they are. And so don't rely on that. Don't make that comparison, you know. I always think, you know, I have no competition other than with who I was yesterday. So when I'm making that comparison to who I was yesterday and have I gotten better and am I continuing to grow and learn, I think that's the only comparison that I need to make. So if we can be aware of that comparison and our expectations, because sometimes, you know, I have part of my philosophy is everything always works out for me. So if I'm feeling in any moment that something's not working out, I just trust that, you know, if I keep at it, it'll eventually get where I want to go, right? Or the things that have gone wrong will lead to something even better than I expected before. So if we can integrate those kind of beliefs into our philosophy and live by them, we will be much happier.
Peter, do you have kids?
I have no children of my own, but my second wife, she brought a daughter into our relationship, and that's been a fantastic experience. So I now, last 4 years, have sort of become a second father to a now 11-year-old.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Congratulations. And the reason I was asking was, you know, speaking about integrating and ingraining those thought processes into people, we need more dads like you that are out there that are spreading that kind of positive message, I think. And because I've got two boys, 16 and 11-year-old, and all I want for them to do is be happy in the world. I don't want them to be CEOs or directors or actors, or I don't want them to be anything other than happy. Whatever they do as a career, that's great, but I want them to be happy. And I just try and get them to understand all the time that they are in control. Nobody's coming to give you happiness. Nobody's coming to make you happy. You're the one who's got to decide.
Yeah, I think that's a really great thing. If more parents could pass on just a couple of really good, you know, positive beliefs for their kids, it would make such a difference. And it's a fine line. I don't want to be coaching her all the time, but at the same time, I think what I'm trying to pass on is through my example, and you know, we talk openly about some of the things that she, and I'm just so grateful that she's so open and asks questions. Not every child is so inquisitive, but I try to sort of explain my philosophy or at least live it in a way that it's easy for her to interpret, and hopefully that will be a great example. I one of my mentors in Canada, she said, you can't change people. All you can do is be the best possible example for them and hope they, you know, hope they take something from that. And so that's I think the role I'm trying to fulfill with the young people in my life.
I'm warm. Maybe with kids in mind and yourself in mind, how important do you think loving yourself is in terms of a contribution to your own happiness?
Well, it's really important, and it's something that I had to learn over time, because you know, I struggled. We all have this inner narrator that tells us this story about what's happening in the world and about ourselves. I have a very strong, well-developed inner critic, and a lot of that comes from the parenting you had and so on. And so overcoming those kind of inner messages that are telling me that I'm not enough, because when we're kids, we have these experiences, we interpret what's going on in the world, the interactions we have, and then we develop our beliefs, and that then leads to a strategy how we, you know, navigate the world. And so I had to overcome a lot of negative beliefs, and it's so common. You talk to psychologists, you talk to mental health experts around the world, and they'll tell you that some of the most common beliefs that people have are, I'm not good enough and I'm not worthy. And so when you find yourself, when you find those themes coming up in your thoughts, it's time to do some work on that and rectify it. I talk about changing beliefs and thinking habits in the book, but you know, I think it's something, if you know the steps, you can do it, but it's something you don't have to struggle with alone. That's why, you know, I believe in coaching, but if it's therapy you need, if it's coaching, or if it's just a mentor that you have, or a good friend that you trust to give you good advice, it's really hard to reflect and see those things on your own. It's really great. And this is another great thing that I think kids are great for. They reflect a lot back to us. You know, sometimes we think, you know, we're teaching kids everything. No, they have a lot. I watch Parrot. Your kids are teaching you way more than you're teaching them, you know? I think the learning to finding the resources to change your thoughts and beliefs so that you can feel better about yourself and start to love and accept who you are. And until you do that, it's going to be hard to be the best version of yourself. And that's, if you have people you care about, children or others that you're taking care of, you know, I like to give the example for 20 years, I've been giving the example of, you know, in the airplane, when they give you the safety instructions, you know, in the case of loss of cabin pressure, first put the mask on yourself, then help those around you. So when you ask about loving yourself, that's part of that. Put the mask on yourself first and then help those others around you, because until you get there, it's going to be really hard to help other people become the best versions of themselves.
I love that. I reference it a lot on stage. The announcement when I was growing up was always, mothers traveling with children, in the event of an emergency, please put your mask on first. And as a kid, I was like, how can you ask a mother to look after the kid before she looks after, you know what I mean? And then, or look after herself before she looks after the kid, until you realize if mommy passes out, everybody passes out. Exactly. So you got to make sure. And I mean, there's so many interpretations. You can't pour from an empty cup. You know what I mean? There's so many different versions. And I think, you know, I'm always encouraging people to fall in love with yourself. In Africa, culture inhibits that so much. So there's this culture of humility. There's this culture of not praising yourself, not patting yourself on the back, not encouraging yourself, and being boastful is so frowned upon. And I often speak about the fact that I get where the culture of humility comes from, but I think that very often we're confused, and the fact that love is not like the other emotions, it's counterintuitive. I believe the more you sincerely love you, the more capacity you have to love those who you'd like to love, and not the other way around. So it's not like anger or sadness. It's a very different feeling. And I've spent Nicholas and I have been doing comedy for 14 years now. And I've spent the last 14 years learning to fall in love with myself. And there were just so many layers to first unpacking all of these perceptions, as you said, all of those preconceived thoughts of, I'm not good enough, I'm not worthy, I don't look like all of these magazine covers and social media people. And then kind of, you know, finding your way around that. And even to the point where I encourage people to sometimes leave logic and other people's sense of truth out of their own stories. So I'm like, you know, for me, the only person that needs to believe I'm beautiful is me. Of course, it helps that my wife thinks I'm beautiful, but I think we subscribe so hard to other people's opinions, and I find so many of my friends are in that trap where people are, you know, standing in their own way because they're so worried about what everybody else thinks. So unsubscribing from that, and you know, if you lead with kindness, I see nothing wrong. But that, I'm so glad you affirm that.
Yeah, I think for me, I agree with you. Love is something very different. It's something very fundamental. It's like the essence of who we are, and everything else is a layer on top of that. So, you know, the anger and the fear that we experience is an interference. And if we don't love ourselves, we're not really being authentic. We're not fully expressing who we are. And I think that's at least the perspective from which I see myself and see the world. And I try to see the positive in others. It's not always easy. Sometimes, you know, our emotions get the best of us and we kind of forget, or we are distracted. But if we can see ourselves that way, we'll start to see the good in other people as well. I think, you know, there are a few different people that have said Hermann Hesse is a literary giant in Germany, but there's others who said the same, that, you know, I think even Carl Jung, you know, the things that we don't like in others are just a reflection of what we don't like about ourselves. And so when we can learn to love ourselves completely, we'll learn to embrace others despite any flaws or idiosyncrasies that they have. So I think that's a really important lesson we can all take.
Love that.
I just want to say the biggest lesson that I took out of your book, and maybe it's even the wrong lesson, is that internal narrator is a liar. It's someone who feeds you all the information that's negative about yourself that nobody has ever said in the world except yourself. You're the only one who believes those things about yourself. And that's the thing that's holding you back from your greatness, is your own mindset and your own thinking. And Peter, I don't even know how to thank you. And it's a very simple, just thank you. Thank you.
I'm blushing here.
a beautiful shade of pink. That's a gorgeous shade of pink. I'm gonna keep mining your mind. So tools again, tools for acceptance. Which I think, you know, we use the acronym GAP, but we always try to make it very clear that there's no order and there's no rank of importance. It's all these things all the time. So tools for acceptance, which I think is very often, and you know, so I used to, in the beginning of the journey, I would say that I think gratitude is the founding principle of happiness. And if you compare it to, for example, Maslow's hierarchy, where, you know, food is the basic human need, I would think that gratitude is the basic need for happiness. And then I felt like acceptance should be the foundation, and it would be, you know, it's easier to build your gratitude on your acceptance. I mean, I'd love to know whether you agree or not, but more importantly, tools for acceptance.
Yeah, I think we're born into this life with, you know, the attributes that we have, and a lot. And I go back to what I was saying about, you know, we sometimes feel like the current moment is this obstacle that we have to overcome, or, you know, the hand we've been dealt with in life is something that, you know, that weighs us down. And I think if we start from a position of acceptance, whether it's who we are physically, who we are emotionally, recognizing that we all have strengths. And this comes from the positive psychology movement, where we make a habit of looking at our strengths rather than our weaknesses. And the things we do think are weaknesses, to recognize, okay, that's just something that I want to develop, because it may be a weakness for me, but in that area, I'm still stronger than somebody else, right? So you can reframe the way you see yourself and sort of your shortcomings, because as you say, we look at the bad news, we look at all the things that we do wrong, all the mistakes that we've made. I remember one coaching client, and she said, you know, this thing always happens to me. And so we look back at, when was the last time it happened? Okay, when did it happen before that? And then it turned out it happened twice in her whole life. And this always happens to me. And so we'll make these same things about ourselves. You know, I always do this wrong. I never get this right. And when we speak in absolutes, whether it's in a relationship or whether it's with ourselves, we know that's a red flag for there's something incorrect about the way we're perceiving ourselves in the situation. So so reframing is such an important piece. And then the way, whether it's negatively talking about ourselves or about anything, when we find that there are thoughts that are not beneficial to us, I really like to use affirmations. And affirmations for a lot of people, you know, they'll roll their eyes and say, you know, they just think it's looking in the mirror and saying positive things. I have a very active way of using affirmations. And so if you have a message that you are something that you're saying bad about yourself over and over again, find a statement that you can believe, that's believable to you, and something that is said in the positive. So it's not, I'm not this again, or I'm, you know, it's not said in the negative, but, you know, I am beautiful as I am. And if you can't believe that, you can say, I believe I can be this or that, right? And so when you find your statement, then every time those negative thoughts that come that make you feel bad about yourself, repeat your statement, and then that those negative thoughts about that subject will reduce and get less and less, and eventually they'll be gone. And if they come back, you've got that statement in your back pocket to just use it every time. And so it's about training the neurons in your brain. You know, we have these neural pathways, and I give the analogy of a forest. You know, there may be a forest in the forest, a path that you follow, but if you want to go a new direction, you've got to walk a new path, and maybe it's overgrown and it's hard to get through. But eventually, if you keep walking that new path, that new direction, a path will form and the old path will grow over. And the same happens in your mind. And that, you know, I'm not a neuroscientist, but I know enough about it to know the way your neurons fire together. The more you think a thought, the more a sequence of neurons fire together, and the stronger that bond is. And so it takes you time to think new thoughts and have a new way of thinking. And that's my best approach for changing your negative thinking habits, whether it be about the way you think of yourself or about any other situation. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. It makes perfect sense. I mean, I do an example on stage, and I go, I think I'm beautiful, and then I make a joke about, but best believe I know how I look. So let me help you understand it. And I say, you know, for years I didn't love me because I subscribed to other people's perceptions, and then I started an exercise where every day, and this is a true story, every day I would look at myself in the mirror, and instead of seeing an overweight individual that had whatever. I thought, okay, what do I like about myself? And I started with, okay, what compliments have I received? And people would always say, you've got great skin. And for 30 days, every day after brushing my teeth, I would look in the mirror and literally flirt with myself and just be like, oh, Jason, your skin is magnificent. Look at that. Beyonce's got nothing on you. And it was so crazy. And I always explain to people, there's this mad thing that happened, because after 30 days, when I walked past a mirror, I didn't see what I used to saw. I saw great skin. Yeah. I took the next 30 days to compliment the next thing, which happened to be my hands. And once I got to a point where I only saw that, I started then making peace with the stuff that I didn't like. So my little bit of askew smile, the way my eyes are deep set, or anything that I was insecure, I'd kind of go, listen, your eyes may be deep set, but with that skin, I think you're working with something there. And now, I mean, my wife is drop dead gorgeous, and I spend more time admiring myself in the mirror than she does. You know what I mean? It's this crazy thing of acceptance. But I think it speaks to that rewiring yourself and taking the time to refigure out those pathways. But you first have to accept that those pathways exist, that those negative habits are present, and then, you know, kind of start that journey of reworking them, which has changed my life forever. And I'm now the most annoying the most annoying. I introduce myself on stages. Please welcome the third sexiest fat man in the country. And then I follow that up with, you know, I'm number one. I'm just being humble. You know what I mean? I'm just being humble.
But that's what a great approach that is, because you're anchoring your thoughts in a positive thing that you can build on top of again and again. And And I think, that's a type of work that I do with people as well, where we look for the sort of, what's the foundation? What's the thing we can cling onto and anchor ourselves and then grow from there? Because a lot of people, instead of anchoring in something good, they have this negative anchor that keeps pulling them down, right? So that's a fantastic, and there are lots of great tools like that, but it just shows the power of shifting your perspective on what you're looking at and then using that to pull you in a new direction. You from your examples know how powerful that can be.
It is so powerful, in fact, that when I now am on stage and tell people how beautiful I am, I see them agree with me. It is so, I promise you, it's so powerful that I think I'm, I look at pictures of myself before I believed and after I believed. And I can see the reflection. There's a lot of, people in our industry that tease me and say, oh, money makes you handsome. And I'm like, no, it's not the changing of the soap. It's about changing the mindset, which has become true. But more importantly, stepping out of relying on somebody else's affirmation, somebody else's confirmation of what I am, what I'm capable of, what I can do. And first, making sure that I understand, because if I don't believe, how can I expect somebody else to believe? If I don't love me, how can I expect anybody else to love me? And it's it's really changed, I think, the last 10 years of my life compared to the 25 years that preceded that, unbelievable difference.
Yeah, and I think it's also important to, I really like to encourage people to look on at the positive sort of, inner qualities that they have, because, if you feel like you're too short or you feel like you're too something else, there's things out of our control. But if you can recognize, yeah, but I have a big heart. Yeah, but I'm kind to other people. Yeah, but I'm really good at this thing and other people appreciate it. Then you start to recognize, well, those are the things I'm going to cultivate no matter what how other people see me. When you start to really love yourself, people will see you in a different way. And I think, I fully believe that the energy you give off from feeling really great about yourself, no matter what. And I've seen people who are disabled, who are have been disfigured by an accident or something, and yet they just have this energy about them, and you can't help but love who they are, regardless of what you see on the surface, right? So I think that's just an important thing to keep in mind.
Love it.
I think the most important, or the most frustrating thing for me, is that people don't understand how easy it is. It just change the way.
And at the same time, I don't think I agree that it's easy, but I think the fact that you have to consistently do it, consistently speak it. I had a great mentor who everybody around him would say to me that, yes, be careful, that guy will trap you in a conversation and speak to you about things you don't need to know. And I very quickly learned from him that everything he says to me is for him. So he was a library of information. And if I treated him like a library, I would win. But if you go to a library without a purpose, you will be consuming information that's not going to feed you. So if I had a question for him, he would give me all of the answers. But if not, he would tell me all of the stuff that he needed to reinforce every single day to keep his mind, to keep himself on the path. Because although I agree that with the neurons, paths will grow over, I do think that if you stop walking the path that you should, those old paths are very easily opened up again.
Absolutely.
And that reversion. So just keeping on. And that's why, I understand, like, from my perspective, I fully understand why the book probably forced you to write it. You know what I mean? It was like something that like Nick said, yes, you feel is important to share. But I, and maybe I'm making an assumption, but I feel like that book was as important to you as it is to us who consume it.
Absolutely. The book for me was really reinforced. Well, first of all, it forced me to put into words and to clarify my own thoughts and beliefs and reflect on them and make sure that, and tweak them and so on. So always, even in coachings, when I have a coaching with someone and I get something out of every time, they reflect something back to me about myself, or I give them some advice and I go, oh, I could take some of that advice myself. But the thing is about it being hard or easy, you know, that's relative. People will, for one, once you've learned to do something, it's always seems easier. It's with that taking that first step that you know seems hard. And if you come from a very negative sort of perspective on life, or you may have already been on the verge of that breakthrough anyway, and all you needed was the book to give you the nudge over. But for some people, they make it hard on themselves. You know, it all depends on how much resistance we have to change and to the information that's presented to us. So easy and hard is all relative, but we often, if something's hard, you're probably making it hard. You know, we are the biggest obstacle for ourselves and our success in life. We create most of our own problems. And once we realize that, it will get a lot easier.
That's what I'm saying. I was going to back it up by saying, it's easy when your mind is right. You've got to be in the right mindset and have the right understanding for it to be easy. And yes, it's easy for me to say now because I find myself in a space where I've decided to make a change and I've decided that I want more out of life. And therefore, I find it a lot easier to just make the different changes, make the different decisions and push those negative thoughts. But I get excited when I feel a negative thought in my mind. I go, no, we don't do this anymore. We get rid of you. So, look, I feel like we have kept you for long enough.
We're gonna wrap. So before we wrap and enter into what we call the Goliath Happiness Index, I want to encourage every single human out there. Whether you're struggling or not, I think this is important. Whether you feel you've got a good grasp on your happiness or not, get the book. Let it feed you. It is get the book. Get the book. Nick's gonna show you the book one more time.
I'm gonna show you. Is this your?
That's me. I signed it.
You see, so somebody gave us their signed copy of your book. That's how much this book.
Shout out to Ronell. Shout out to Ronell. Thank you so much.
Ronell is amazing. Deep gratitude to Ronell for all she does. She does a lot of the PR for me. So fantastic.
Shout out. And I can honestly say it's made Nicholas taller and more handsome. So even if that's why you're going to read the book, trust me, do that. It's going to make you happy. We cannot thank you enough for your time and the work that you do. The Goliath Happiness Index is super simple. We rate 1 to 5, 1 being couldn't be worse, 5 being couldn't be better. And it's just about where is Peter with regard to gratitude, acceptance, and perspective. So 1 to 5, gratitude.
Gratitude, I'm a 5. I'm a 5 on all of those in this moment because it's dynamic. And I think happiness, is, as you know, is in the moment. So I don't want to give people this feeling that I am always happy on top of the world. I have my moments like everybody else, but I now know how to navigate and get there very quickly. I'm super grateful to be having this conversation with you guys. And I love that more people are talking about happiness. So gratitude's a 5.
Love, respect. We can't wait to continue seeing you infect the world with positivity, change, happiness, and joy. And we hope to move a rock for you. You have done us a great kindness by agreeing to come on our platform. Thank you.
I thank you for having me. It's been fantastic talking to you both.
Wishing you nothing but the best. Peter Teuscher. Ladies and gentlemen, Rethinking Happiness. Rethinking Happiness. Go and get the book. Peter, do you want to just give a quick shout out to any of the other platforms? I know you've got the podcast where people can consume some of the content very easily. So anywhere where people can just start getting in touch with you and the way you think.
Absolutely. My website's the best way to track me down. It's peterteuscher.com. So the last name is spelled T-E-U-S-C-H-E-R. And you can find a link to my book. I write a blog every week to inspire people on a wide variety of topics. And then, you know, if anybody needs any coaching or wants to ask any questions of me, feel free to contact me through my website.
Are you based in Germany or do you just happen to be in Germany at the moment?
I live in Germany. I live in Hamburg, Germany. So, you know, the wife and kids are here. So it's now my home, but I'm originally from Vancouver, Canada.
So we've never been to Vancouver. We've only been to the big comedy festival in Montreal, which is, you know, some of the best times of our lives. And I thought about it today, Nicholas. Our first time in Montreal was 10 years ago. It was 2015 when we first went. So that's how old we are, which is, yeah, that's what's happening here. But love, and we hope to see you. If you're ever in South Africa, please reach out. And if we are ever in Germany, we are going to stalk you. Wishing you nothing but the best.
Nothing.
Thank you for watching, everyone.